All right, we're here at the Waveform Study Center with Heidi Nielsen, who has been working on a project called the Alternet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Alternet Library Branch Waveform.
And I think people have an idea what the internet is. What is the, is that like the internet for people with outies or something? Or
exactly. Yeah, so the Alternet is, it's kind of like an FM radio broadcast, but from satellites in space, of data instead of sound. So so the data can be videos or audio or data files or PDFs or any kind of file. And it's like
the internet. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's information just like the internet, but it's broadcast from space. So you can receive it on a, you know, with a dish satellite receiver and a computer, basically like a small computer, like a Raspberry Pi. Similar to that.
And does it have to translate the files, or is it just like the internet that what sort of files are they?
So it receives the files as a transmission and does decode them, although they're not encoded other than just formatting, basically. They're
not like secret.
Yeah, codes. It's not like a secret code. Yeah,
it's
so
not number stations we're talking more public.
Yeah. So it's on this computer, and you can then look at the files on a Wi-Fi device. So you can go up to it with your phone, with your tablet or computer, and just connect to the Wi-Fi and access all of the files. So from that, you can you see them or copy them onto whatever device that you're on.
And who puts this together? I mean, is this a military application, or like somebody has to pay for this satellite to go up and share these files? Like, what is behind it?
It's a nonprofit organization, and the idea behind the whole effort is to allow people who live in remote areas or who don't have access to the internet. So it's meant to be kind of an alternate or a way of extending the world's knowledge, extend libraries, extend all of this stuff that we can all get on the internet to people who can't receive it.
So maybe scientists in Antarctica are downloading files this way, or
possibly or remote places in Africa, or the kind of information or the kind of files that tend to be in the Outernet broadcast are Khan Academy kinds of things, Wikipedia, sort of general knowledge, but also people can contribute to it. So not directly, you can't like broadcast back up to the satellite, but you can submit your data files to the nonprofit organization that then puts them into bins and puts them into the stream.
So we're searching for all kinds of metaphors to describe this. So it's a little like a library.
Yeah, it's a lot like a library. They're calling it Humanities Library.
They are using that library term. So
exactly.
And is it organized like a library, or how do you find, or do you stumble upon things, or?
It's in directory structure like a library, so it's organized. The files are organized.
Not by the Dewey Decimal System.
Not like Dewey. Yeah, it's more like a directory structure on your computer, and they're organized by subject areas and by publisher, that kind of thing. So you go through directories and find information that way. And a lot of it, too, is news. So there might be regional news that would be filed under region and that kind of thing.
And how did you stumble upon this or find out about this, or what interested you in this?
I'm very interested in satellite systems and thinking of the things in space, thinking of satellites and everything in space as part of our landscape here on Earth, and so thinking about how those things connect. And so at some point I heard of the Outer Net and looked more and more into it and thought it would be terrific to build a receive station and see what that's all about, you know, as like a parallel system but to the internet, but also as a way of using satellites and sort of thinking about how the satellites in space connect with how we are, with where we are on Earth.
And how does this relate to, I guess, other projects you've done in your past?
I've been very interested in this kind of area for a long time, or for a few years anyway. I've been interested in transmission arts for the same kinds of reasons, for receiving and using satellites in space. For example, receiving transmissions from weather satellites that then you can decode or transmit into images of space. So like using the orbiting NOAA weather satellites and getting images. So sort of like a giant selfie from really far away.
There's a whole culture of transmitting images through sort of like fax machines.
Yeah, exactly. So that's exactly what it is, like a faxes from space, essentially. And being able to build, I've built my own antennas and been able to receive these transmissions. So I've done those from different
spots. I know that a lot of boaters use those things. Do the boaters use the Outernet too? Like if you're at a ship out at sea, you can hook up to a satellite?
That's a great question, and I bet that they would love to, but I bet that it's hard to, that it moves around so much.
Yeah. Not just the waves, but you're just always moving.
Yeah, exactly. That you need to have a pretty solid setup of non-wiggly movie setup in order to like point it directly.
So you have to find a deserted island to prop your antenna on.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's hear one of those files. What sort of things do you have for us to listen to?
Well, I have a couple of math lessons that have to do with, I was looking up some of the, with geometry. One, the station, the library branch that we're building here is made on a pyramid. And so in building it, we were learning, I don't know, it's just kind of a funny step back to like think about the geometry of a pyramid and how complicated and interesting they really are. So anyway, I thought playing a math lesson would be fun.
So I have a three-dimensional solid right over here, and I want to imagine what type of a shape I would get if I were to make a vertical cut. And just to refresh ourselves or give us a sense of what a vertical cut is, imagine if this was made out of Jell-O or something kind of fairly soft, but it's still a three-dimensional solid, and I were to make a cut, let's say I were to make a cut right over here. So let's say I have this big, sharp metal thing. Let me draw it like that. So you have this big, sharp metal thing. Let me draw it a little bit neater. So you have this big, sharp metal thing that I'm going to cut right over here. So this is the thing that I'm going to make the cut. And I'm going to go straight down. This is a vertical cut that we're talking about. So this is the thing. This is the thing that I'm going to cut with. All right, I'm going to make it big enough so that it can capture the shape that will result. So this thing right over here, it's right in front. And I'm going to make it go straight down and cut through this Jell-O or whatever you want to call it, this rectangular pyramid of Jell-O. And what would be the resulting shape of the intersection between that Jell-O and this thing that I'm using to cut it? And now I encourage you to pause your video and think about what the resulting shape would be. And the shape would be in two dimensions because this purple surface is a two-dimensional, it's a two-dimensional, you could view it as part of a plane. And so where this intersects when you cut down this rectangular pyramid is the shape we're looking for. So I encourage you to pause the video and think about it or try to come up with it on your own. So let's think about it and let me draw the rectangular pyramid again. So that's the same one. And now let me see what it would look like once I've done my cut, once I've brought this thing down. So then So then this is where I cut. So I cut it right over here. I cut it right over here. And then it'll exit the bottom. It'll cut along this side like that. Cut along that side like that. And then it'll exit the bottom. It'll exit the bottom right over there. And let me draw my whole thing. And so once I slice it down, it will look like this. It will look like this. My best shot at drawing it. It will look like this. This is a vertical cut. So I brought this thing down. And now the intersection between the thing that I'm cutting with and this pyramid is going to be this shape right over here. It cut into the top right over there. It would get all the way to the bottom right over there. And along this side, it would cut right there. And along that side, it would cut right over there. So what's the resulting shape in two dimensions of essentially the intersection between the slicer and the jello? Well, it would be this thing. It would look like a trapezoid. Let me do that in a new color. I'm overusing that one color. It would look like a trapezoid. So this would be the resulting shape. So the resulting shape would look like this. Would look like this. Just like that, if you made the cut right over there.
Are there mostly audio files, or I was guessing it's mostly text files?
There's a lot of text files. There's a lot of PDFs. There's some images. There's video for sure, but they have it. They have the internet sort of divided in categories, like prioritization area. So they mix like base files with other content. So there's like, I forget the breakdown, but it's like 30% broadcast of this. And so sometimes they're rebroadcasting things to make sure that people who have already received, who are new to it, are getting the base files. So they donate or they allocate a certain amount of their time to that, and so well as these other, you know, other newer things. So,
Can you describe or explain or how... first, are there other listening stations for this anywhere? Because that's kind of what you've created, right? Or what is it that you've created with the Outernet?
So we've created a receive station. So it consists of a dish, a 90 centimeter satellite dish, and a computer similar to a Raspberry Pi that has a Wi-Fi router there. And all of that is in, you know, with a power connection outside, and it's surrounded by a seating area that you can sit. That it's kind of like the whole thing looks a little like a landed satellite itself crossed with an Adirondack chair. And so the Adirondack chair benches are facing in cardinal directions, so like north, south. So you can sit on the north bench or the south bench, and so you can see the relationship of where you're sitting to where the satellite dish is pointing. So you kind of like have a sense of where the satellite is. So that's what's installed outside.
And so the satellite, I guess, moves in tandem with the Earth
mm-hmm.
to stay at the same point in the sky at all times.
Exactly, yep. Yeah, so it's a geostationary satellite, communication satellite. It's called Galaxy 19. So it broadcasts all kinds of things on different frequencies.
Do you know how large the satellite is itself?
I've seen photos of it. I don't know. The photos, it was like the size of a truck, basically. But then it has solar panels that extend from that.
And at the bench listening station that you've created, do you plug in or you pick it? How do you log in or how do you connect?
Well, you go and take a seat and use your the device that you brought with you, maybe your phone or your computer or a tablet, and go to the Wi-Fi settings and you find the one that says Outernet.
And so it creates its own small Wi-Fi signal?
Yeah, exactly. So it's a Wi-Fi hotspot that extends probably 50 feet from the point. I've been able to get it from here, but it kind of depends on where you are in the building. I don't know. I haven't tried up here. So you connect to the Wi-Fi hotspot, and then you'll be able to then... see the file directory structure and navigate around in the directory structure.
And is it a very intuitive directory structure, or it sounds like it's kind of a Linux long list of directory, or what is it like?
It looks like, you know, icons of files, and you click on those and you go into the files underneath them. So it's like a directory tree. Yeah. And so it's pretty intuitive, actually. But you need to sort of go up and down the directory structure to get to the next set.
And what are people's reactions, I guess, when they log in the first time? Is it like discovering a new internet?
I found it that way, yeah. I mean, it's not, you don't, I don't know, search for wild things or, you know, that kind of, it's more like a discovery, you know? It's more like, oh, what's here? It's like the internet was in the, you know, back in the beginning. Like, you're not really sure what you're going to find, and so it's more this interest of, like, what people have put up there and what everybody has considered useful for everybody. So it's this interesting curatorial project.
It's like the pre-commercialization of the internet, back when it was sort of just, like, individuals posting things.
Yeah. So it's a lot like that. And so it's that, but it's also like kind of this consideration of what people around the world, everywhere in the world, would find useful together. What useful information would be good for everyone. And so it does tend to be geared toward, you know, teachers in remote locations who want to give good math instruction to their students, but then also just everything else, like very, like music, sharing music with each other. Yeah, all kinds of things.
How do you know how widely it's used?
It's fairly new. It's within the last few years, and so it's gaining use. I don't know how widely it's used. I know that there are definitely, I mean, from the forums I've been reading, there's definitely a lot of users in the U.S. who, you know, working on things. The videos that they have on the website are about setting up receive stations in Malawi and so on. So it is being used, yes.
And are there, is there an internet page for it where you can go and upload files, or do you have to go to the outernet to upload files to the outernet?
You go to the internet for the outernet. Yeah, so there's a internet website, outernet.is, and you can go there and find out how you can contribute to the outernet.
IS stands for International Space or something?
Something like that. I'm not sure.
I know ISS is the International Space Station, so that was the closest I could... so as a nonprofit, you can donate to help them too?
Is that? I'm sure you can.
Somewhere. But if you go to outernet.is, there's all sorts of information about it. So what do you hope that people will do at Wavefarm with the outernet?
I'm hoping. I mean, what I like about the outernet is in sort of an expanded, I like the landscape of space feeling. So the idea that you're contributing to and communicating with people using outer space in that way. But I also like the idea that it's the system that's completely outside of the internet system that we commonly use. So if people can use the files and like see this other system happening, I hope that that's inspiring. I've also made one physical book to be in the Outernet Library Branch Wave Farm. This is it. It's
you can't quite see it on the radio or in person.
Or in person. The title is kind of more visible at an angle, but. Anyway, it's the only physical book that will be at the library branch, so it'll be tucked under the bench, and it has in it instructions for how to gain access to the outernet. But then it also has all of these images. You can take a look at it. All these images of libraries. So I've been thinking about what libraries are and how they function for, like, how the internet relates to libraries and how, I don't know, just what libraries mean to us and what they are for the future, and kind of like how the library ideas are kind of, the idea of a library is very saturated in so much media, or I don't know, as a place.
You don't have any pictures of virtual libraries in here.
I do. Well, kind of. I have libraries in video games. So people go into Minecraft and make libraries in Minecraft, for example. Or there are imaginary libraries that people can navigate through in a number of different video games. And there are whole television shows that center around libraries. I mean, you know, so
the Clue game, how did the library?
Oh yeah, exactly.
Other famous libraries in
history. Yeah. So I was trying to kind of give this meta idea of like what libraries are and have, I don't know, images from them for it to be kind of this, I don't know, space of inspiration.
You have that car. I've seen this picture on the internet, like over the past 4 years, of this car that's all made out of books or bookshelves that are filled with books, and you can, this drivable library.
Oh yeah, there's a truck in there, or there's a tank in there that's covered with books. Oh, maybe yep, it's,
the
is
tank.
That it?
Yeah, yeah. The tank, yeah.
Yeah, and there's a few bookmobile cars, trucks and cars that are in some official capacities. I think there was an old one from the New York Public Library that was parked in the Bronx that was filled with books. So anyway, so I've been thinking about, you know, how this all relates to libraries and like our visions of libraries and how libraries are inspired.
It was one of the parts of the Occupy movement was creating these Wall Street they had their own library there. Even in the age of the internet, they had physical books for people to read and talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's one image in here of that library. Yeah.
What else do you have to play for us from the outronet?
I have a video about the internet, wires, cables, and Wi-Fi, because that's related. I have a related video about gravitation, because the satellite that this is connected to is in a delicate balance with gravity. It's far enough out. It's in geosynchronous orbit, like we were talking about, so it's far enough out that it's just outside. It's exactly synchronous with the spin of, with the turn of the Earth. So we have a video about gravitation. I have a couple of selections about libraries themselves. I have the sound of the interior of a library.
All right, let's listen to that.
Now, let me see. Under the present Dewey Decimal System, this book belongs...
Wow! Look at all these books! Me never seen so many books before!
Shh!
Hmm? Oh, yeah, right.
All right. Quiet, please!
I did not see wastebasket.
All right.
Excuse me, sir? Sir? Could you tell me what you're doing with all these books here?
Oh, well, why, this is a library. Yes, people come here to borrow books they'd like to read.
Oh, that's terrific! This library!
Yes.
Oh, well, that's great, because me try hard to read.
Oh, that's very good.
Yeah.
Now, what can I get you?
Well, me want a book about Little Red Riding Hood.
All right.
And one box of cookies, please.
Maybe you don't understand. You see, this is a library.
Yeah?
Yes, we have books here. Only books. We have no cookies.
Oh.
You understand?
Me see. Okay.
Right.
Okay. Then let's see. Me take book of nursery rhymes.
All right.
And a box of cookies, please.
We don't have cookies. We only have books. Just books. No cookies. All right?
Oh. Oh, no, oh, yeah, right, right, got it now. Okay, then let's see, me take a picture book.
Picture book.
Yeah, and a box of cookies.
How many times do I have to tell you we don't have cookies? Only books.
Oh, okay.
Just books.
Okay.
No cookies.
Okay, no get upset. No get upset. Okay, don't get excited. All me right. Not fussy.
All right.
Just give me box of cookies.
No! We don't have cookies. No cookies. Just books. That's all. No cookies. Understand? Just books. Books.
You know what? Me get feeling you only have books.
That's right! Just books!
Me got it. Me got it now. Okay, okay.
All right.
Good.
At last.
Good.
Now, what do you want?
Me want book about cookies.
Fine, that we have. A book about cookies. Good.
And a glass of milk, please. A book about cookies and a glass of juice. You got some carrots? About rutabagas. You got any cantaloupe?
I'm on the Alternet wiki page, and you were before were saying this, comparing the Alternet to FM radio, and the wiki page really does that too. From our description, I don't know if we've really gotten that clear. How is it similar to FM radio?
Well, it is.
I guess it's sort of open source. You don't need a proprietary device. You don't need an Alternet device to receive it.
Yeah, exactly. It's not proprietary. So any device, the Alternet does sell devices, but all of the way to make them are open source, so that you can build your own. You can recoup a different type of satellite just within certain specifications that work technically, but it's not a proprietary thing.
So you could make it with a Raspberry Pi or something?
Yeah, exactly. You can make one with a Raspberry Pi. It's anonymous. So it receives only, so that you can't track anybody who's using
it. It doesn't collect IP numbers of who's downloading?
There isn't anything such.
There is no IP number.
Yeah, there's no way of tracking.
It's just a file.
You at all. Right. So it's like you, when you receive FM radio, no one can track that you're hearing anything.
So it's sort of like a dead drop in some way.
I guess so. Yeah, actually.
Do spies use it as a dead drop, or
I have no idea, but that's,
if they were, they're not telling.
If they were, they're not telling. So sure they are.
The secret information is embedded in the file, so you don't see it when you download it, probably, right?
Right. It's all secret. So yes, everything is coded. It's free, completely free. There's no fee to use it at all.
And it's not regulated. There's no net neutrality rules or alternate. The FCC is not regulating it.
Right. I mean, it's regulated in the sense that it's curated, you know, like they're not like
by the nonprofit company that's
yeah,
put it together.
Exactly. So it has to be, not so unlike the internet where you can just post something and somebody might eventually be able to find it. This is like a stream. So there is a vetting process that it goes through in order to reach that stream. So it's not like, so it's community based and all of that, but it's not
Is there an approximation of the amount of data that is there?
Many gigabytes.
I was trying to look around here to see if it says anywhere.
Yeah, lots. And as I said, they
it's only a couple years old, so
right.
Does it have where are the fires held? Are they on servers somewhere, or are they on the satellite? Or, you know, where is the actual information?
I don't know exactly how it works on before it's broadcast. So it's probably that they have all of them stored on a server type of thing. But on our end, for example, as the receive station, it's stored directly on the computer that we have here on flash drives. So there's 32 gigabyte capacity of flash drive that we have here. And when that fills, when and if that fills, which it will eventually, we could add capacity to it just by installing flash drives.
And that's in the listening station, the flash drive?
Yeah, it's at the branch library in the flash drive. In the
hooked
computer.
Up to the satellite dish that's receiving the signal.
Exactly. That's exactly it.
All right. Was this sort of created as a reaction to the internet becoming more commercialized, or do you know the background of the creation story?
It's mostly a reaction to an interest in extending knowledge to people who aren't able to have internet in a regular way. So who either don't have it at all or aren't able to get it regularly. And so it's a way of extending those capacity and that knowledge to people who don't have it. Mostly. I mean, I think all of these other things come into play as well. But I think mostly it's trying to expand knowledge to people that don't have easy access to it.
And as part of its recent start, because the technology and the cost of satellites has come down, or is it easier for regular people to launch their own satellites these days?
It absolutely is. I don't know if... It's absolutely easier for people to launch their own satellites by CubeSats.
That's what I was going to mention. The CubeSats are kind of like the Raspberry Pis of the satellite world.
Exactly. And so they've tremendously opened up the possibilities of people, to individuals, to directly be involved in space technologies. I don't know that this... The satellite Galaxy 19 and the other five satellites that are in a network that are used by the outer net to be worldwide coverage. I don't know that those are regularly used by. There must be some kind of fee that they're paying to use them. So I don't really know. They're not. Those are, owned by a corporation and stuff. I'm pretty sure.
And I'm reading here on the wiki page that it launched August 11th, 2014. So it really is
it's quite
pretty
new.
Brand new. And there also seemed to be a sort of user voting mechanism, too, about the content that it says once a URL is submitted, other visitors may vote on it, with the URLs receiving the most votes entering the OuterNet broadcast carousel. And there's also some sort of Facebook page where you can make requests. The OuterNet Facebook page.
Yeah, and there's also a Twitter feed. You can suggest content and by sending Twitter messages to some of the people in who are curators of it.
And can you sort by most popular? Like, do you know what are the kinds of things that are the most popular files among users now?
There is a content schedule that you can view online. So it's it's within those wiki pages. If you can find it within the wiki pages. And so you can see what they're hoping people are going to contribute to, and what's lined up for things and suggestions by people. There's a bunch of TED Talks, a bunch of books here. I'm looking at the list. And then there's, so it's basically like the allocation of things and like what they're going for, what directions they're going for. So there's the categories here are music, podcasts, education, books, art, video, civics, environment, software, user created bins, and games.
And I'm also reading there, developing a listening device that's solar powered, weatherproof, self-contained high speed receiver. They're calling the Lantern.
Mm-hmm.
And But mostly now it's a real do-it-yourself culture, I'm assuming, that the people involved are all kind of maker people or people that aren't afraid of using solder or tools or something.
Yeah, I would say that. They are trying to simplify things and make that lantern device that you mentioned to make it simpler and more portable. I don't know much about that. I think there are some advantages and disadvantages of that system also.
And what's been your most surprising thing that you found out while working with this technology? Were you shocked by anything or amazed by any part of it?
Well, I guess I find in aligning the satellite dish, there's this sort of amazing thing about, I don't know, just physically, wrenching and making these adjustments, of a millimeter or something, just a couple of millimeters, adjusting it, wrenching this thing back down, because you want this dish to point at something that's, 24,000 miles away. That's so far. And that just the tiny adjustments in this thing actually point so precisely to something that's so amazingly far away is really, that's kind of cool.
It's like the, I think I said this to you the other day, that in the Star Wars movies, when they go to hyperspeed, they have to check first that there's nothing in the way because, and it has to be a very, precise calculation because you don't want to run into a planet. And if you just move an inch this way, you're moving hundreds of thousands of miles when you get exactly down the road.
Yeah. So it's just impressive and just amazing that the distances involved and the precision of something like geosynchronous orbit. I don't know.
So you've learned a lot of math this week.
I've learned a lot of math. I've learned a lot of geometry. I've learned a lot this week.
And so if people come to the wave farm, they see this thing, and you described it well. Is it looking like a half of a satellite and half of an Adirondack chair?
Yeah, it's like the two crossed. So you can go, it looks a little like maybe a lunar lander that's landed in the middle of this field, but you can walk up to it and it sort of starts resembling an Adirondack chair that you can sit on, or actually four Adirondack chairs back to back, where each one is pointing in a cardinal direction. So you have landscapes to view on every side, and you can kind of look off into the direction of the satellite, which is so far away.
All right. Well, we'll listen to one more file before we go. What else do you have?
It'll be a surprise.
It'll be a surprise. Okay. We'll listen to this now. All right. Thank you, Heidi Nielsen, for joining us today from the Wave Farm to talk about the Outernet and the new, what is the official title?
Outernet Library Branch Wave Farm.
And it's officially installed as of June 11th, 2016.
It is indeed.
And hopefully we'll last a long time out in the fields at Wave Farm.
Right on. Thanks so much for having me.
All right. Thanks, Heidi.
Bye-bye.
Your life work. And shelves contain a lot of books, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions. How do you feel about them? Do they mean something to you? Are they your friends? Have you a real love of books and learning? You do? That's good. Now, do you like people? And do people like you? Do you like all kinds of people? The young as well as the old. People in all stations of life. You do? That's wonderful. Because when you have these two important qualifications, love for books and love for people, you may well consider the vocation of a librarian, a vocation that gives full enjoyment to the librarian and radiates it to the public. The public, that may consist of children with an awakening interest in literature, or professional men searching for special scientific information, or the blind, who do their reading by touch, or people of rural areas whose library is brought to them on wheels. Yes, there are many aspects to this worthwhile occupation, all of vital importance in the nation's life. Let us consider some of the various types of libraries and start with the greatest of all, the Library of Congress, which is located in Washington, D.C. One of the largest in the world, this library, established in 1800, is relatively new when compared with those of some European countries. Serious scholars may use its excellent facilities and wonderful collection of more than 5 million books and manuscripts. This truly national library extends research and other services to members of Congress, the government departments, and to the public. The many different libraries in our country have various functions, depending on their location. Each one has to answer a specific need. Therefore, a modest rural library must be different from a city library, offering a multitude of services to meet the needs of a great variety of persons. The specialized library in an industrial plant is different from the one owned by a law firm. But although libraries differ, basically the task of the individual librarian remains the same, bringing books and people together. The largest number of librarians are found in 5 general classifications. First, we may mention the catalogers, who usually work behind the scenes. They organize and interpret library collections for you readers. Here is an illustration of what proper cataloging can accomplish.
I'm looking for a book on television, but I forgot...
Do you know the author?
No, I don't, and I don't know the title either. But it's a blue book, and it kind of gives the whole story, you know.
I think we can help you.
This boy's problem was not an unusual one. He did not know the author's name, nor did he remember the title of the book. But he knew the subject, television. Because the cataloger did a good job, the book was easily located, and the boy was further encouraged to use the library facilities. Proper book evaluation and careful research render a great service to the patrons. Second, there are the reference librarians who help readers in their search for special information.
Through your books on China, can you help me identify the dating of some old Chinese bronzes?
I'm starting on a new project on radar. Could you compile a bibliography on this subject for me?
The reference librarians locate various materials through their familiarity with the contents of the library, a very important money and time-saving service to the public. Third, we have the circulation librarian who organizes and supervises the distribution of books. By the way, this job belongs to a classification which does not necessarily require college training. Fourth, we have librarians who serve the young people, much the same as adults are served, except that the children's levels of interest are emphasized. Each child is looked upon as an individual whose reading habits are in the formative period. Fifth, there are the school librarians who contribute to the educational programs of their school. College and university libraries employ special staffs for the work of research, cataloging, reference, and circulation, just as do the large public libraries. The large public schools generally employ special librarians to assist the pupils in finding suitable books. During free reading periods, the librarian attempts to direct the young reader's interest into approved and worthwhile channels, a challenging and rewarding job. In the smaller schools, the library is usually under the supervision and direction of a teacher librarian. Pupils working during free periods generally handle circulation. However, under such a plan, the library personnel changes from period to period with little opportunity for individuals to really understand library work. Up till now, we have discussed the jobs that must be done in every library. So far, we mentioned the catalogers, the reference librarians, the circulation, children, and school librarians. At times, they do their share in the reviewing of new books, evaluating and eventually buying them. This is done with one single purpose in mind, the improvement of their service to the people in their community and the country at large. In library work, There exist a number of positions that require special competence and preparation. Take, for example, the administrator of a large library, often a highly paid executive. You'll understand that this person needs a great capacity for leadership, a high degree of vision and imagination, and a thorough understanding of all phases of procedures in his organization. Then there are the specialists in subject resources, particularly in scientific, technical, and social science fields, who render bibliographic and reference service to public, university, and special libraries. Extension librarians for county and regional libraries who understand the social organization of rural communities and the objectives of rural leaders pioneer in a steadily expanding field. Librarians in adult education, including readers' advisors, community workers, and group leaders, provide special service for adults. Public relations specialists interpret the library's work to the public by personal contact or by means of newspapers, radio, films, or other methods of public relations. Specially trained librarians are always developing newer resources and educational uses of microfilm, motion picture film, and other visual materials, such as posters and pamphlets. Music scores for classical and popular compositions are available to music lovers. Photograph records are also found in many modern libraries. Hospital librarians provide special service for patients and hospital personnel. For instance,
did you get me that material on the sternocleidomastoid and the zygomatic head of the quadratus labii superioris?
Yes, doctor. Here it is. I didn't mind the research on them, but the pronunciations really had me stumped for a bit.
The professional librarian is required to have a college degree and to have attended a special library school. Although librarians in small libraries are not required to be library school graduates, they must have had some special training. Reference work required in high school courses in the sciences, both social and physical, will be especially helpful in acquainting you with the library. Study the work of your school librarian, and perhaps you can secure permission to assist. If you become a librarian, you will find that there can be great variety and interest, as well as security in this career. Your abilities will be challenged, but you will be rewarded with real pleasure from your work, salaries comparable with those of similar professions, and opportunities for advancement. You will derive satisfaction from a knowledge that your work is vital and essential in forming the kind of world in which you want to live. When you investigate the field carefully, you will find that there is a need for thousands of trained librarians. Contact the library schools and the American Library Association. They are able to give you valuable advice. If you have the personal qualifications, librarianship may well become your life work.